T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com.
Mully and Hall, live and local, Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
A swing and a pop fly, this could do it. Rizzo in foul territory with a play. Anthony is there, he's got it, and the Cubs win the ball game. Two in a row for the Cubs over the Mets. The Cubs win it by a score of 16-4.
Vinny Hinostroza. Right down the gut, then spun it for Hagel. Hagel to the outside with a look. He scores! It's Brandon Hagel! The Hawks complete the comeback and win it 5-4 in overtime.
So the Cavaliers end a three-game slide, and the Bulls' chances for a three-game win streak, that's out the window, and they're going to have to start another streak, hopefully tomorrow, against Charlotte. Dotson throws a pass wide left side. Felicio for three. Hit front rim to end the ball game.
Right now, checking the weather, it feels like 28 degrees in Cleveland. You know, I am hoping, because this would be a bullpen day for the Sox, I'm pretty much hoping that the starting time is maybe a doubleheader some other time. I think that would really help the Sox. Also, with the use of the bullpen on this road trip, if you could get today off and tomorrow off, then the bullpen comes back. You're playing Texas, you know, you're on a long homestand, and the bullpen comes back and it's fresh.
Well, you just got your wish. You just spoke it into existence. The game is canceled tonight. You're good to go.
Wait a second. Did you just get that?
Yeah. So a traditional doubleheader between the White Sox and Cleveland will take place on May 31st. And there's Stoney being the Oracle again.
Well, there you go.
What a great moment.
That's awesome.
Our thanks to the fine folks at WSCR, givers, not takers, on the Cubs' final call. NBC Sportsnet on the Blackhawks, game winner. WBBM 780 on the Bulls, because of the Cubs game, they were on our sister station, WBBM, and that was the Bulls' final call. And you heard Stoney yesterday with Lawrence Holmes. Just a beautiful moment where all came together as the sayer sooth and the weather report came in, and beautiful.
That was great. Skilling's got nothing on Stoney. That was a great moment. And yeah, the Cubs, they score 16. The White Sox don't play. The Bulls embarrass themselves in Cleveland, and the Blackhawks. Good night for the Blackhawks, Mully. We saw the victory. And how about the nugget that Darren Drager from TSN dropped during the game? Jonathan Toews, he reported that he is in improving health and expects to be part of the Blackhawks next year. We will wait and see. There's still a lot of mystery surrounding his health status, but that was an encouraging update on behalf of the captain.
Yeah, I wish it was the playoff run. I mean,
love
the captain. Would love to have him back. But that's good news, because you need him. He's a great player and a great part of the history of the franchise. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. We'll start with Psycho. He's in Westchester. Hey, Psycho.
Hey, Psycho.
Hey, guys. Good night last night. The Hawks win, and good to hear good news about Toews. Just get healthy, buddy. We'll see you next year. Cubs scored 16 runs. Am I happy? I'm happy they won, but the core, they talk about the core. Only one guy got two hits out of the core, and that was Contreras. Everybody else got one hit. Matt Duffy got three hits, and he's a bench player. And my thing is, watching the Cubs last night, Avi Baez struggling mightily. comes up the bat, hits a grand slam. Yeah, okay. There's no pressure on you, Javi. There's no pressure. When the pressure's on you, it's a swing and a miss. Let me tell you something. And then he comes up, his last at bat, and he bats left-handed. How does David Ross let this happen? If I was a coach, if that was me, and my coach saw me do that, I guarantee you, I'd be benched. And for this to happen, I'm like, it shouldn't have happened. And Javi should have, like, got up his last at bat, struggling like he's been doing all year. And like I said, do something different. Hit the ball to the right field. Do something different. Mayor Ramirez, when he was coaching him, said he's one of the best hitters when he goes to right field. I haven't seen him go in the right field. When he goes to right field, he's one of the best hitters, I think. A really good hitter. And for him not to do something like this, for him to bat left hand, I think it was a slap in my face as a Cubs fan. Hey, I'll let you guys talk about it, guys.
Good day. Thanks, Psycho. Appreciate
yeah,
it.
You know, Dustin was scandalized by that too, which is unusual, right?
Well, I didn't like it, but I don't think I'm going to overreact to it to the point where it's going to ruin my night. I didn't like it because I feel like with a hitter struggling as much as Javi is and making contact this year, look, he still's got a 44.9% strikeout rate. That's too high. So if you have an at-bat where you can tinker, where you can play with the idea of going to right field, maybe hitting against the shift, trying some different things, you should take advantage. That said, Mully, don't you agree? Or maybe you don't. I think that David Ross is in a tough spot in this situation only. You got to let Javi be Javi sometimes. And that's a really difficult line to walk. You know, there's the freedom that you want to allow him and afford him that he's earned to some degree that allows him to go up to the plate without necessarily a plan always, except for to swing hard and hope that you make contact, versus the more disciplined route that you want him to take to be selective and disciplined and all those things. Somewhere in between, you know, you'll get the results. He needs to get better, but his defenders will say he's on a pace to have 40 home runs, 40 steals and 130 plus runs batted in. That's not bad, even though he's striking out way too much.
I think you got to go back to Joe Maddon, or you got to go back maybe to Judy Collins and send in the clowns. I mean, every once in a while you need a juggler. You need a little send in the clowns. No, I mean, don't you have to have fun in baseball?
Simon the Magician.
Yes. So yeah. I guess what I'm saying is, and I mean this sincerely, next time that they're up with, they have 16 runs, Javi should just switch gloves and go out there and play left-handed. And I'm not making that up. He says that, you know, when you look at the tag metrics, it's because his glove is on his dominant hand. And that's how he does all his trickery with the you know, getting people out and being able to tag people as well as he does. So if he really has that urge, given his batting average and the strikeouts and everything, just have him switch gloves and go out there for an inning and see if we could really have some fun.
Yeah, that would be funny. I don't know that you see many left-handed shortstops, but that would be maybe making a farce, even a bigger farce of the situation than batting left-handed is. At least he has shown in batting practice and otherwise that he can hit left-handed. It's not that unusual, even though I would recommend that he not do that again.
Rich? Aren't we a pair? 312-644-6767. Let's try Kevin. He's in University Village. Hey, Kevin.
Morning, Kevin.
Mullion Hall. Good morning to you guys. How are you?
Doing well.
Living a dream.
Living the dream one day at a time. Amen. I was having such a great morning on my way into work. And I hear the, you know, Pat Hughes calling the Cubs game that I watched last night, all is well with the world. Blackhawks came back and won. And then we went ahead and we talked about the Bears. And we're talking about drafts. And you guys are talking about the possibility of Pace giving away a couple first-rounders and a third and a fifth. And I'm, like, thinking of pulling over and throwing up because I'm tired of him not being handcuffed, I guess. Let's run the tape back. I called you guys back in December, and I was like, you know, it was in the midst of that. Remember that six-game losing streak that they broke, and the
it was glorious.
Season was,
it was sounded a glorious
because
one.
We did that. Yeah, what a great team! No, I wish they would have lost out because then we'd be in a better position where we'd be sitting maybe with top 10 somewhere in there, you know, and then you only have to give away one pick that I'm sure you would do. But either way, do we not remember Mike Glennon? And we we signed him to that ridiculous deal to start four games, and we then bench him and because we drafted up to get Mitch. It's like, I really hope this I know that I'm asking a lot here. I really hope that he's able to learn from his past mistakes. There's no, as a fan, as someone that's going to be around here for a long time, much longer than Pace, I don't want to see us trade the farm again for a position that they don't even, like you said, just to check the box. You already signed a quarterback that you missed out on because you panicked and you missed out on Fitz because the Seahawks were yanking your chain. But it's like, come on, don't, for the love of the game, just pick the best player available, strengthen your team, build around what you have, and let's see what happens. But I don't know. I just had to get that out so I didn't vomit it's all Kevin, over myself
Kevin,
on my
great
way
call.
To work.
It's a great call, Kevin.
I agree with that entirely, Kevin. I think it's a really good call, only because when you trust people to make these kind of big decisions, Mully, we have seen how far back the franchise can be set by making the wrong one. And once you make the wrong one, how many are you going to be empowered, if you want to use that word, or permitted to make another one that could be just as catastrophic? I suppose people are suggesting the answer is yes. If you free Brian Pace to do his job and to leave him alone and stay out of football business, I don't know that you can unconditionally trust somebody who has no track record to – there's no frame of reference here. It's like, well, you know what? If he just does what he did when he drafted this quarterback or when he signed this guy, there's nothing to suggest that he's going to pick the right quarterback. So without that past, I don't know how you trust him to do that when you're planning for the future.
David, let me ask you a question, and I mean this sincerely. Can the Bears afford to draft their version of Jordan Love? Can the Bears afford to draft a guy that you just – holding on to, hiding on the roster, and eventually he's going to take over because he's going to learn the position behind the guy that you're starting. And then you're going to get down to the end of the year and maybe get to the championship game. And then when you lose, fire the defensive coordinator. Don't worry about the guy that didn't get you the other wide receiver that you obviously needed throughout that game or whatever other weapon you could have gotten. Because you're hiding the quarterback, and that's going to be your future, and you can all smile to each other and high-five each other because you pulled it off. You got to a championship game. Can you afford to do that given the needs on this team?
No, you cannot. You're not the Green Bay Packers. You know, you are the family that you're not living in that neighborhood. You're not. You can't afford that nice car or that pool or whatever luxury analogy you want to use or metaphor you want to look at, because – you're the Bears, and you are challenged at the position where the Packers have mastered. And the Packers are able to draft Jordan Love and store him away in their quarterback closet with the rest of their really cool toys because they have Aaron Rodgers, one of the best ever to do the job. You're the Bears. You're more desperate than that. You also have more needs than the Packers do. And so I don't think that you can afford to waste a pick given the circumstances that Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace face this year. Absolutely not.
If you're in year three, right, if you're Ryan Pace and you're just getting going and you haven't tried the quarterback tree yet, then I might understand it. But given how wretched and, you know, again, Mike Glennon, they brought him in here, right? They brought in – they moved up in a draft to get Mitch. There's no reason to believe – that there's a track record here, and then you look at the players themselves, there's no reason to believe that you got any kind of hope in terms of being able to figure out, okay, the top three are gone, but four or five, let me tell you something, we're going to do something magnificent here. And again, you're giving up this year's number one, you're giving up next year's number one. You don't have the firepower to move up, but you're going to do it because you're desperate and you're beyond desperate.
I just don't think that you have anything to point to that says, trust me. So you've got to build your roster the best you can. You still are a general manager without a playoff victory, so your pick should reflect wow. that. And you should get somebody who can help you more this year than in future years when you don't know that you're going to be here and nobody trusts your vision when you say that everything is going to be a certain way based on the pick of a quarterback that you haven't proven you know what one looks like. So I think that's unfortunately the harsh reality that we're looking at here in Chicago.
All right, we've got the pick six next. Mullion on the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's Pick 6 with Mullion Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick 6 with Mullion Haw starts now.
After that wretched loss, the Bulls dropped to 12th place in the East, but now have a 26.3% chance of landing a top four pick in the NBA draft lottery, according to Tankathon.com. Which are you rooting for, the playoffs or the draft?
Well, I'm rooting, if I have a rooting interest, I want them to make the playoffs. And I would love to see this team in the playoffs. And I think that there was a time when I thought they might get there. But what I've seen, I don't see how they get there now. I mean, they don't play a lick of defense. Their perimeter defense, yet again, was an absolute train wreck yesterday. If you watch that game, they didn't defend. They didn't guard anybody. That was a team that was just knocking down threes. I mean, to let a team as bad as the Cavaliers score as many points as they scored on you is just sinful. There's no way around it. You cannot allow a team that bad to score 121 points on you. And, you know, by the end of that game, it looked like it was manageable. It looked like they could come back. They were never in that game. That was a fallacy. They were just awful in that game. They had no hope whatsoever. So I think it's more likely, if I had to pick one, they've got, I believe, a 7% chance to get into the playoffs. And if it's a 26.3% chance to get a top four pick that would be protected, I think the worst case scenario is the most likely scenario, which is the Bulls don't get in the playoffs and they wind up with a draft pick that goes to Orlando. They don't get, they get a top 10 pick or something, but they don't get it protected, and they lose that and they get nothing to show for the trade.
With their luck, it would be fifth or something like that, just outside the realm. Look, they're 5-10 since the trade. They have 14 games left to go. There's nothing that we have seen that suggests that a playoff spot is a realistic thing to hope for. And yet, after a game in which Vooch questioned the energy, the physicality, and the focus, three things that are really controllable. You can control your attitude, your effort, your intensity, all those things that the Bulls can control. They didn't, and they haven't done very well in games against inferior opponents. So I don't have much confidence at all. But given the choices, I want to stay consistent. I don't like the idea of tanking. I don't like the idea of celebrating losing. I think it's a bad trend in sports. It's something that is disturbing. But that's the way you rationalize if you don't get to the playoffs. I still would like to see them make a run. I still think they're better off for making that run and getting in, squeaking in even as a 10th seed into the tournament, if you will. But I just think that is very difficult to envision given how wretched last night was.
A pick six to end the half!
After the White Sox were snowed out, given Thursday's off day, would you still pitch Dylan Cease Friday against the Rangers or skip Cease and use Dallas Keuchel, who lasts through Sunday and still would be pitching on regular rest?
I think I'd go with the veteran. I think I'd go with Keuchel. I think I would say to Dylan Cease, okay, throw your bullpen, work on some stuff. Be ready just in case Dallas Keuchel doesn't have it. Maybe, you know, coming back a day earlier than maybe he previously expected would create some sort of problem, but I would go with the more sure thing. They benefit from having an extra day off because of the snow out. So try to take advantage. You know, rest your young guy, maybe work on some stuff. But you have with Carlos Rodon emerging the way he has early in this season, you have four starting pitchers that you absolutely do trust in that rotation. Lance Lynn is on the shelf, so it's down one. Use one of those guys if he's not overtaxed, and I don't think that starting him Friday would overtax him. So I would go with the sure thing and say Dylan Cease, okay, let's work on some stuff.
I don't know what I would do. I think that's a really difficult question, and I keep going back and forth in my head as I've looked at this question, thought about it since I saw it this morning. Here's the problem I have. You don't know what the timetable is with Lance Lynn. You know that he was missing one start, and Tony La Russa gave an update saying that it was just going to be the one start that he misses. Okay, so that's information that sounds good to me, and I can operate with that information. But is that accurate? And am I going to wind up in a situation where Dylan Cease is going to have 7-8 days off, and all of a sudden I think he's got to start because his turn is up and the other guy can't go? So I just need more information to make that decision. I think what I would do is I would go to Dallas Keuchel and I would say to him, do you have to pitch this game in order to stay in rhythm, or do you want another day? And if you want another day, I'd have Dylan Cease go. And I know he wants the ball, and I know what he wants to do, but I would let him make that call based on whether he feels that the rhythm he has demands he pitch this day or wait a day. And I think I would prefer if he would say, I'm going to need an extra day and let Dylan go.
A pick six of 100 yards!
According to stats, Javi Baez became the first player since Gorman Thomas in 1978 to go 0-for-4 with four strikeouts in one game and hit a grand slam the next. Do the Cubs and everyone else just need to accept that's who Javi is, or should we hope for better?
You've got to hope for better. You've got to have better from him, because you know what? He's capable of better. He's just got to stop expanding his strike zone, and he needs to concentrate on really swinging at pitches that are in the strike zone. If he did that, he'd be back to being the guy that was a runner-up to the MVP. And I don't believe that a hitter should be allowed to not exercise any kind of discipline because he's a free-swinging guy. I think that, you know, you can – when it works, it's fun to see, but it doesn't work nearly enough. And I think that you've got to get to him and talk to him and get him to reduce that strike zone. Because as we've seen that grow, we've seen him ruined as a player. It's as simple as that. The very fact that he can strike out four times and then hit a grand slam, it tells you exactly who the guy is, which is this feast or famine player, and no one wants that. What you want is consistency. And he's consistently upsetting, frankly. It's just hard to watch, and the whole violence of the swing and everything that goes with it. Give this man a strike zone and you're going to be really happy you did.
Yeah, I'll have to admit, I did not see the Javi Baez Gorman Thomas comp being made and after last night's performance, and yet stats unearths that one. And then when I tweeted it out, Molly, last night, somebody comes back at me with an image of Dave Kingman. And I'm like, okay, is that where we are with Javi Baez? Is that where we're waiting for him to either hit the ball onto Waveland, or he's going to strike out with a swing that where he's trying to hit it to Kenosha? I mean, this is a guy that is feast or famine, and he is better than that. You're exactly right. That's a great comp and memory. Like when he was competing for the MVP, I don't think he was swinging this wildly. It was because he showed some plate discipline. He would go the other way on occasion. And I know Javi defenders, as we said, will point out, he is on pace for 40 home runs. He is on pace for 40 steals and to drive in 130 runs. Those are numbers you can live with. But the approach still could use some fine-tuning, some tweaking. And if you are as talented as Javi Baez is, and we have seen it before, you want to see it again, and you want him to be more consistent with the approach. That's all we're asking. You can do the Gorman Thomas stuff later, and Dave Kingman can still swing that hard, but just worry and focus more maybe occasionally on making some contact.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
Our guy Big Z quoted an NFL front office source who said there could be a desperation move by the Bears in the draft, suggesting a likelihood they would trade up for a chance to draft either Justin Fields, Trey Lance, or Mac Jones. Would you be willing to swap this year's number 20 pick, next year's first round pick, and possibly a third rounder for the chance to draft either of those guys? Would that be enough?
Well, I don't know if it would be enough, Molly. You got the draft chart out yesterday, and it's interesting to revisit that a little bit later. I think Biggsy's a column on ChicagoTribune.com, must read for Bears fans. Very fascinating day in the quarterback carousel. We'll get to some of it later with Justin Fields telling NFL teams, or the report coming out about how he's managing epilepsy as he heads into this draft. And as we have pointed out again and again, I am not in favor of giving up as much as it would take to move up that far in the draft to get one of these three quarterbacks. These are not sure things. They're not polished quarterbacks. None of them is named Russell Wilson. That's a different conversation. Don't confuse the two things, because when you're trading up what you would need to trade to get Russell Wilson to Chicago and what you were discussing with the Seahawks, that's not what you would be willing to give up to get somebody who hasn't taken an NFL snap. Very different conversations.
Yeah, you know, the Justin Fields thing, just to briefly touch on that, I did not know that Alan Faneca had played his career with epilepsy. I did not know that Samari Roll had done the same thing. And when you hear of players that were capable of doing it and having great NFL careers, it makes you rethink whatever pause you may have had. My first thought was, oh, that explains why he was going to fall. And then I thought, boy, it'd be great if he fell to 20 for some reason like that. But I got to tell you, I think that this, the idea of a desperation move, the horror of that can be found in the definition of the phrase. You can't operate a business, a billion-dollar industry, with desperation moves. You just can't. You can't have people. You know, the job that Ryan Pace has to do is make the best decision for the team, for the team's future, for the immediate future, but also having a wider picture. You cannot allow anybody to make a selfish decision during an NFL draft or during any kind of player procurement period. They have to be thinking about what is best overall for the team. And you, if you're entrusting him to have that job, that's how he better look at it. And I get the desperation. They were up against it. They don't really have anybody that makes you feel, you know, QB1 trolling people with that. That's not going to make anybody happy. That's not going to, that was just a dumb thing from on social media, and ask Chris Bryant about social media. We'll get to that later too. I got to tell you, David, this potentially could be one of the more disastrous moves that the Bears make. So I would be awful careful about what you do, but I really want them to be able to say, okay, if we can't get this, then we get this and we double back and get that, et cetera, et cetera. I think the idea of getting a quarterback out of this draft come hell or high water is a seriously bad idea.
This is Jamal Adams with a block and a pick six.
Were you surprised that Blackhawks coach Jeremy Colleton started Malcolm Subban at goalie in the most important game of the year last night, especially given that Colleton correctly credited Kevin Lankinen with turning the team's season around just a week ago?
Yeah, you know, I thought that I thought the fact that he took him out of the game, and the fact that I'm talking about Lankinen, and the fact that it seemed as if Subban was in better form, I thought that you had to go with form over reward, let's say, for what had happened over the course of a season. So it did not surprise me. I'm curious as to what they do next. I guess that you stay with Subban now. But I think that Lankinen has been like one of the central figures in this season. If you did not have him, we'd be having a completely different conversation about the Blackhawks, and it would not include whether they're going to make the playoffs or not. Now, I think it's important with hot hands to be able to have a professional athlete that if he's got a hot hand, you stay with him. And that's what you have to determine when you go back and look at the tape. You got to look at every goal. You got to see these defensive blunders. You got to see the stops the guy made that kept him in the game. And you got to make a decision based on how he played in that game. And if you don't believe that he gave you enough of a winning chance, then you go with the other guy. But if you believe he did, then you stay with him.
Yeah, I think it's a Tuesday morning this was going to be the case. Here they're going to go with Subban after you replaced Kevin Lankinen on Monday night. I think this was predetermined, and it was the right move as it turned out. Gutsy move by Jeremy Colleton, and the Hawks rewarded that gutsy move with a gutsy effort. You now, it's a no-brainer, I think, Molly. You have to ride the hot hand. You are where you are because Malcolm Subban gave you a chance to come back last night. He wasn't great early, but he kept them within striking distance, made 36 saves. It was the first time he had appeared in three straight games as a Blackhawk. I think Friday night it becomes four, and it gives them the best chance to win. This is the kind of performance you can ride in terms of confidence, in terms of momentum, which I think does mean something in hockey. It's the kind of performance you can ride into Friday and maybe, just maybe, continue the winning ways.
It's a pick six.
How do you feel about the collapse of the European Football League and the subsequent apologies from team owners like Liverpool's John Henry and Manchester United's Joel Glazer? Is that a victory for England or all of sports in all countries? What will be the fallout?
Well, the fallout is these American owners tried to apply that to the soccer over there. And I think there's out of town stupid, then there's out of country stupid. And this was the latter. And they misread the situation. They underestimated the importance of soccer to the culture, to the society, to the identity of people there. I think we saw that come out, and this was a bad read. This was a bad move, and I'm just glad it unraveled quickly.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, there were problems with the Champions League, and so they were going to develop this Super League. I love that it collapsed. I thought it was great. I thought it was a victory for the people and a victory for fans everywhere. But at the same time, I think there are some serious issues that they need to address. I'm stunned, quite frankly, that they had no concept of the PR disaster this turned out to be. And the very fact that you've got John Henry sending out a video of apology, that you got Joel Glazer, who I don't think he's ever talked to Man United fans. I don't think I've ever heard the guy. And he issues this apology that was right out of John Cleese. You know, we apologize unreservedly to you. He used the word unreservedly in his apology. I laughed out loud. It's just remember A Fish Called Wanda when he's being held upside down? That's the kind of apology that Joel Glazer gave.
Great
and that
movie.
Was the image I had in my head.
Love that movie.
Love that movie, too. And I just think that you tried to take your, I don't want to call it avarice, they wanted guaranteed money, and they couldn't figure out how to guarantee a certain amount of money, and that uncertainty was kind of the triggered, hey, in American sports, we know we're going to make this amount of money, we're not going to be relegated, we're not going to not be, as long as we do what we do, we're going to be laughing. And the idea that only four teams get into the Champions League and you got a top six is why they tried to guarantee everybody a share. And it just blew up on them like you've never seen, because it spoke to a lack of cultural understanding of the game as they see it and the game as the people see it. So you cannot – I kept hearing the word bullying. How can they bully us like this? That's how the perception was, that these out-of-town raiders came in, took over local teams, and bullied the people that lived there. So I'm happy it fell apart, and I think this is an opportunity to learn more, and I think the consequences are going to be ugly for the people that tried to leave. Not the teams, because you don't want to affect the players, you don't want to affect the fans, but I think they're going to have a hard time getting guys, for instance, on the broadcast deal if they feel like they're going to be pulling away and maybe take all that information with them. So it's going to be really interesting to see the fallout, but I loved what happened. All right, there we have it. That's the pick six. We've got Casey Johnson next. We're going to find out why the Bulls fell apart in that fashion. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Banks it in!
KC Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it! Stop it! Did not do him like that!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh my goodness! Did you not get the memo?
Always fun to talk to KC Johnson, even under these horrible circumstances. He's brought to you by Alphamonte Nissan. Alphamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. KC, good morning. How are you?
Morning, KC.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Boy, that was awful last night. I mean, that was just really disappointing. And, you know, we were trying to come up with different words for it. But, God, it was just a terrible performance. And they never were in the game. And, you know, you couldn't help but feel like that was one you got to have. And obviously you end up in 12th place when it's over, and it feels like something else is over, maybe the season.
Well, we'll see about the latter, Molly. I would agree with you about the former. You know, I think I might have shared this sentiment with you guys before, but when you cover the complete Tim Floyd era, somewhat are desensitized to bad losses, but that one offended even my basketball sensibilities. It just seems like they obviously came out with very little urgency. And the issue I had, and I tweeted this at one point, is there was a time in the second quarter, Colin Sexton on a one possession grabbed two offensive rebounds, and then on the third attempt scored in the lane over past Lauri Markkanen, and it just looked like it was the Cavs that were down 20 and chasing a playoff berth, not the Bulls. And then those, I don't look, off nights happen, blowouts happen. It's part of the league, but the lack of urgency and the lack of desperation with which the Bulls played was, to me, not only apparent and pretty obvious, but it was a little troubling. They really need a bounce back game tonight against the Hornets.
Totally agree, KC. You referenced the Tim Floyd era. I think a lot of people saw shades of Jim Boylan era last night, unfortunately. Wow. And let's face it, I don't necessarily want to go here. I got a lot of time for Billy Donovan. I think we both respect the heck out of the way that he gets through to his players. But when you're talking about intensity, energy, urgency, these kind of nebulous things that are very difficult to describe, but you know it when you're not seeing it. How much of that is coaching and his inability to reach these players at a time where you really need to get the most out of them?
I mean, I think the first part about, you know, how much of it is coaching, preparation to play, it's an age-old question in our business for sure. I think the latter, whether or not he's reaching them, is probably a little bit of a stretch. I mean, all we've heard all season, and again, we're disconnected from a layer from these guys, just, you know, with the Zoom angle and not being in the locker room. But, you know, not only with his track record and his resume and his directness and his communication skills and his reputation as a player-friendly coach, all we've heard all season from the players is, you know, how much he is resonating with them and how much he and his staff are connecting with them. So I'm not sure I would go there. But, yeah, I mean, the first one is a fair question. It wasn't asked last night. Maybe we should have. I will say my guess, having asked other hard questions of Billy, you know, myself and also the members of the regular B crew all season, is that when you ask Billy a question like that, he does look inward. And my guess is that he would say, yeah, part of that is on me. I need to be better. That's kind of his MO. But yeah, that's just the troubling thing when you have a loss like last night, is all these questions come into play. Because again, you can have a loss, you know, you can lose the Cavs, and you know, if it's a 2-point game, you're ruining a missed opportunity, or even an 8-point game, you're ruining a missed opportunity. But you're not asking these larger questions that call into question other aspects, because it just was a non-competitive loss, really, except for that brief run that they had to get it to 12.
KC, I think the very troubling element here is that we saw this team have like a players-only meeting, whatever it was, and they decided they were going to commit to defense. And you saw them have a modest winning streak where they were holding opponents below 100 points and they were playing perimeter defense pretty well. And you thought that they had kind of unearthed something, or they had opened the door, or they had unlocked something. And then you thought, okay, Zach's coming back in a week, you know, hold on, play that defense, he joins up, all of a sudden you got some momentum and you're going to make it. And all of that evaporated. I mean, their perimeter defense was just god-awful. I saw so many open threes. And again, it's hard to judge when they're down like that at 33 points at one point, but could you give guys more open shots? Is that humanly possible?
Well, no, it's a good point about the defense, Molly. And if you looked at the start, well, the other thing I would say is, real quick, is this: the Cavs, I actually texted somebody that I think the Bulls are going to lose tonight before the game, and I'm not just saying that because I got it right, because I get a lot of things wrong. But here's why I said that, because the Cavs are the type of team, exactly the type of team the Bulls struggle with. Crafty, athletic, multiple ball handlers. And if you watch the start of that game, I mean, I love that backcourt. I always have. I think it's got a lot of potential. And even in the game where the Bulls won here in Chicago against them, that backcourt played well, but they played a lot better last night. And if you watch the start of that game, Billy did the thing where he does a lot, where he burned an early timeout. And yep. Twice, I can't remember if it was both times Sexton or both times Garland or one time each of them, but twice they got an advantage on pick and roll. The guard got hung up on the screen, a big drop, and they throw the alley-oop Jared Allen for a dunk. And after the second alley-oop dunk, Billy called a timeout. But that's what the Bulls have struggled with all season, is ball containment and getting hung up on screen. And Kobe had a rough defensive start last night. Garrett Temple was not as effective as he was the previous game, although he was less stuck on screens as some other players. So yeah, that's the solution all year. They defensively is to me what they've got to do until Zach gets back. So you've got another chance tonight against the Hornets.
Casey, quickly before we let you go, 5-10 since the trade. You allude this to this on your column at NBCSportsChicago.com. Will their struggle since making the trade make management more leery in making a big deal in the offseason if they need to be?
Well, no, I don't think it'll speak grand because, look, David, I mean, the management made that move, and all we heard was, we're not done. So you can't, what I was trying to say is you can't fully judge the trade off 5-10, but what they also made the move for was to be relevant in the future long term. And part of that plan is to be attractive, an attractive situation. And if you make that trade and then can't even make a play-in team, how attractive of a situation are you to free agents? I mean, that to me is the troubling thing. And look, I'll close with this, guys. You've now dropped the 12th, and look, it's only a half game out of 11th and a game out of 10th, so you just got to right the ship here and get Zach back. However, 12 of your final 14 games are against current Eastern Conference playoff teams. So you've made it difficult for yourself now. And we're talking about the 10th seed. We're not even talking about the 8th seed or the 6th seed, which Thad Young brought up a long time ago. We're talking about the 10th seed. So it's last night was deflating. They got to show up all tonight against Charlotte.
Thanks, KC. Appreciate it.
Good stuff.
All right, guys, talk to you next time.
Yeah, that's a rough one, and that was a really bad performance. We'll talk about it. We'll get into all of it. We've got a lot left for you. Mully and Haw on the Score.
The Cubs game live on your mobile device?
Can you believe it?
Wow. Yes.
Magnifico!
No matter where you live, just download the Odyssey app to stream all the action of the Cubs games right to your mobile device or smart speaker.
It's a grand slam, and the Cubs have won the ballgame.
That's how you do it.
It's fast, easy, and free. Download the Odyssey app now.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.